This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek back in Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr from Aurora, Colorado, and you are listening to a special training episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 19th, episode 980. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, Horse World.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
A safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here at Horses in the Morning. Of course, Christy is here with the Certified Horsemanship Association, the third Tuesday of every month. And we're glad to have you back, Christy.
Thank you, Glenn. Wonderful to be here today.
We got home last night about 1 a.m. after our flight being delayed several times and spending many lovely hours in the Philadelphia airport.
Beautiful place, Philadelphia airport.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. If I get quiet during the show, it means I'm napping, and you'll just have to take over, okay?
No problem.
Yeah, you and Jennifer can do it. Hey, a couple things before we get started with our training episode here on Horses in the Morning is a couple programming notes. Tomorrow on the show, we have the EquityMFG.com Celebrity Trivia Challenge, and this time our celebrity is Jared Rogerson. Of course, Jared, we play a lot of his music, and he's let's just say he's probably one of the best-looking guys that we have on the show on a fairly regular basis. So he will be our celebrity. I had to talk him into it. He grilled me about the kind of questions. So, Jennifer, make his questions easy, okay? We don't want to embarrass him. A lot about bull riding, bronc riding and stuff, you know, and music. Maybe some questions about music, too. And then we consider Auditor Week, which means that our auditors, the people who are kind of like our members who pay to be a part of the auditor program at Horse Radio Network, are co-hosting this week because Jamie is off. So tomorrow, Auditor Doreen Rose will be co-hosting with me, and actually we'll be doing the Equity Trivia Challenge and all of that. So that's fun. We had our first auditor yesterday, and she did wonderfully. And then one other programming note, tomorrow night, Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, is our sixth anniversary party here at the Horse Radio Network. Helena B. from the Stable Scoop Radio Show, which was the first show, the first episode, was August the 8th, 2008. We will be hosting a party, and we want you to call in. Basically, there's no rules. We're just going to have alcoholic beverages and be sitting there chatting with people. As long as they'll call, we'll chat past guests. And, you know, listeners, we just want to hear from everybody. It's 347-637-3238. Give us a call after 7 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow night, and you can listen in on this channel, on the Horses in the Morning channel, and you'll find links on all of our websites. I didn't mean to take up 10 minutes of your show there, Christy. I just needed to get those things out. And you've been busy, too. You got home late yesterday, too.
I did. Yeah, I was saying if my voice is a bit gravelly, I'm actually not trying to start another career over the phone. I'm actually have just been really, really tired of talking. We've been conducting a CHA certification clinic here locally in Colorado up in Double D Ranch, which is up in Fort Collins, and we had a great time. We had eight wonderful ladies come to get certified in between the ages of 20 and all the way to 55, and they ranged from Montana, Wyoming, and Colorado. And some of them were definitely more Western-based, some more English-based, some a variety of both. We did some jumping, and it was great because Ashley Hamill, who is our regional director for this region and also a CHA certified instructor. And her business partner, Chuck Mangan, actually are the ones that train the horses at Double D, and they have an Arabian show barn. And I learned on Arabian horses, so it was really fun to have mainly Arabians as our school horses for the week. I think Arabians sometimes get a bad rap of not being good for beginners and good for, you know, people that are learning how to ride. But I'll tell you, if they're trained right, they sure can be. It was a really, really fun week.
Oh, yeah. Well, you went back to you were in Nostalgia City here, weren't you?
I was. It was definitely fun because, you know, the irony of the whole thing is I have known Chuck. He probably doesn't want me to say this on the radio, so I'll say ahead of time in case he's listening. Sorry, Chuck. But I've known Chuck since I was 15 years old. He used to be a judge for me and a mentor of mine many, many years ago, and now it's so much fun to call him a dear friend and to be able to collaborate with him on things and whatnot. It's fun. Good man.
Well, terrific. Well, tell us what is coming up on today's show. We're going to be talking a little bit about issues in the saddle, right? Or under the saddle.
We are. Correct. So last time we had talked a little bit about issues on the ground a couple of shows ago and, you know, some of those types of problems that can happen on the ground and how to handle those. So we thought, let's move up now to when we're actually in the saddle and what kinds of things can occur, including such vices that might happen like rearing, you know, things like kicking out to the leg and how that's very different than bucking, things like spooking and shying, which, of course, is just the natural flight response for the horse. So how do we deal with that? I don't think that there's probably anybody out there that has ridden more than, let's say, 25, 30 times, and I think that's even high, that has not had a spook or a shy, even just a little one. Right, because that's what horses do naturally when they get worried, nervous, or afraid. So I think that's very important. We're also going to be talking about, you know, when they spin, if that's the kind of way that they spook, how is that different than just the stopping spook when they just kind of stand there, and how are there ways to kind of help the rider stay on and also help the rider deal with those issues so hopefully the horse doesn't continue to do them.
Sounds good. And I know Jennifer's going to be jumping in here today because, you know, my time in the saddle is somewhat limited. You know, I spend most of my time on a squishy cart seat. So, you know, and we were talking before the show, I've been very lucky, and I'm knocking on wood, that I haven't had a rollover in all the years I've been driving and all the weird drives we went to. I've had some really good ponies, and I've been really lucky not to get dumped out of my cart. But that could change any minute with Scooter, depending on what mood he's in. So that's why I knocked on wood. But, you know, I did have a turkey come down. We were on a trail ride once in the Smoky Mountains, and I was riding was it Tennessee Walker, Jennifer? It was some kind of walking horse. I can't remember.
It was a saddlebred.
Saddlebred, yeah. And I had a turkey come down and hit my horse in the head out of the tree. That was exciting. Yeah, that was exciting. Flew right out of the tree and hit my horse in the head. And fortunately, my horse didn't do anything. So I give
that
horse kudos.
Horse back on it.
I stayed on. Yeah, Jennifer tried to buy it that day.
<What's> that <horse? laughs> He wasn't giving him up. No.
Yeah, she figured any horse that turkey comes out of a tree and hits him in the head with a novice rider on board, you take that one home. But he wasn't.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Chance wasn't given.
Well, I have a really good rearing story.
Okay.
So it was back in my medieval times day. Yes. My medieval times days. This was a little bit different because I actually reared on purpose. So at medieval times, you're supposed to, at the end of your little routine, and I had to go out there
and
do a little
routine.
Now,
wait a minute. Stop there. I've forgotten you worked there, right?
Yes. I was there for 2.5, almost 3 years.
Which one?
The one in Buena Park, California.
So the people who haven't heard the story before. Okay, so the one in California. Okay, cool.
Yeah, one in Buena Park, California. It was actually my high school job. I was there all of high school and into college.
What were you? Were you a performer or a worker, or what were you doing?
Well, I was only a performer when somebody didn't show up. Otherwise, I was stable worker and clean tack and groomed horses and changed the colors of the horses when they ran back in and put the new color on them to go back out and did all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But every now and then, somebody would not show up, so then I had to ride in the show. So this one particular evening, I was kind of trained to do all the stuff except for this one bit. We had never gotten to the rear. Because to be honest with you, when you're riding a horse that's trained to rear, it's very hard on them, right? Because they normally don't walk around on their hind legs. And with a rider and a saddle and all that, it can wear down their hocks after a while and can kind of burn them out a little bit and make them a little sore. So we would practice this routine with everything but the rear. And then Victor, my boss, would just say, okay, Christy, now you would rear right here and then you'd be done. And I said, okay, that's great. How do I cue for rear? And he would go like this, you know, hup, hup, and then you'd lift your hand slightly and then you'd just stay balanced and da-da-da. Well, I thought, well, this won't be an issue. I can do this. It's Lippy the Lippa's honor. He's pretty short to the ground. It's all good. Okay. So out we go. It's show day. And he goes, Christy, you got to go out there. And I go, well, Victor, I've never practiced the rear. He goes, we don't have time for that now. Just hop, hop, and he'll go up, and you just lean forward slightly, and you're going to be just fine. Okay, fine. So I'm near 17. I got my outfit on. I'm thinking I'm all this and a bag of that because here I go out into the arena, right, with all these people watching me with a spotlight on me and all my shiny garb on my beautiful white Andalusian stallion. And he was fabulous. Lippy knows his job. He's like, yeah, yeah, right here, Spanish walk. Yeah, yeah, right here, half pass. Yeah, yeah, right here, Tempe changes down the middle. So I can fly change every other stride. I'm good. He got it all done. We get into the middle, and I didn't even have to hup hup. He knows, yeah, yeah, right here, I rear. So he rears. It was great. Sat in the middle. I kind of leaned forward. I was very balanced. Didn't pull back on the reins, right, which is the big problem with rearing because then you make the horse fall over on you. So I didn't do any of that stuff. Just sitting there all happy as a clam. And then I'm like, okay, down Lippy. Nothing. Ho Lippy. Nothing. Lippy, I don't want to rear anymore. Nothing. So meanwhile, the crowd's going crazy because Lippy is rearing, and now he's spinning kind of on his back legs a little bit, like striking out. He's getting into it, right? And I'm getting a moment of sheer panic. Like, I am never coming down out of the sky. Lippy, you really need to go down, buddy. So all of a sudden, I see Victor's head poke out, and he has a horse, and he takes his hands, and he touches the withers of the horse. I'm like, got it. So I put my hands on the withers of the horse, and dear Lippy comes right down and prances out like, oh, I am so great.
If he hadn't
very
done that, you'd have been there all night.
Oh, my gosh.
It was great. So we get to the back, and Victor looks at me. He goes, were you showboating? I said, you never taught me how to come down. He goes, well, I thought everyone knew. I go, Victor, I've never reared before. He's like, oh, yeah, I forgot.
You think
everybody
that would
knows
be
that.
One? You think that would be one that you would want to practice ahead of time, the rearing one. That would be the important one to practice. Yeah.
You think? Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, those of you that ever happen to find yourself on a trained rearing horse, you now know that most of them know to go back down if you touch the withers. Okay, good information to have.
You know, we did shows for a lot of years. We had an acting company that did shows for a lot of years, and things wouldn't go right sometimes. And I'm assuming that was the same with Medieval Times. They do those shows every night. So there has to be things going wrong. Now, maybe the audience doesn't know it, or maybe they do. But are they pretty good about going with the flow when those things when things happen?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, most stuff, to be honest with you, happens backstage. Once those curtains close is where the things are occurring, which is great. Because if they happen outside, you know, they have kind of a way of masking it. Like if a poor knight actually gets really hurt, the audience that thinks, oh, wow, they really look good when they're role-playing. And no, they're actually really hurt. And they still have the two squires come on either side of them and bring them out. And then, of course, in the back, we have always an EMT on board to take care of those issues. But, yeah, every now and then, you know, it's live action, right? I mean, it's exciting and stuff can definitely happen. It was a real benefit to me as a horse person. And just choosing to make my career out of horses, having worked there for as long as I did. I mean, I worked there every day, 5 days a week, after school or on weekends for almost 3 years. And, boy, you learn a lot when you do that.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, it's all choreographed, and the sword play's choreographed, and the jousting's choreographed. But, you know, when we work the Renaissance fairs, there are times when somebody's just 2 inches off. And that's when the accident happened. I remember the one time, Jennifer, remember this, one of the jousts at the end of the day, and they were full armor jousts. And they would hit each other and stuff, but, they knew where they were going to hit, and it was pretty choreographed. Sorry for all those people who go to Renaissance fairs and think it's real.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. But this time what happened was the lance got caught under the knight's chest plate. Picked him right up off the horse. The horse went right out from under. The horse kept going. He was still hooked to the lance. and sent him back on one of the 6-inch round pillars that were in the ground, you know, holding up the lift. Sent him right on his back on top of one of those. And they carted him off in an ambulance. Yeah, he was hurt pretty bad. So, you know, that stuff does happen.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's a whole different kind of emergency dismount, people.
Yeah, that's a different kind.
Absolutely.
If he hadn't, obviously he had the solid steel to help him from breaking all his ribs. But if I remember right, he did break some ribs, and he was fine after being in the hospital for a while. But that stuff does happen because you're still dealing with swords and lances and, you know, you're still doing that. And horses.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And horses can do anything at any time, right? Like, it drives me crazy. I actually love reading classified ads for horses because some people just, oh, this makes me laugh. You know, that whole thing, bomb-proof. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's the one you want to look out for when you go.
Yes, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about, Jennifer, you had some questions for Christy. We're going to get to our guests. We have, is it Ken Najorka?
Ken Najorka, yes.
Okay.
Ken Najorka, and he's our regional director in northern Florida, and he's done lots and lots with reining. He also has worked with an intercollegiate team down there for both their English and their Western program, so he's very well-versed. And then we have Brent Winston coming on, and Brent works with the DDFL, which is the Denver Dumb Friends League here in Colorado, who's mainly in the past has been a adoption center for cats and dogs. Well, they've opened up one recently in the last year or so for horses called the Harmony Equine Center, and I had the pleasure of actually working on their Accords project, which is basically coming up with the different scenarios on when horses have vices and when horses are really ill, you know, which ones are going to be able to be treated, which ones are going to have to go just based on the fact that they could be dangerous. And those are some really hard choices to make sometimes, but sometimes things are not trainable out of a horse, as I think we all know, and we try really hard to do so. But he's their full-time trainer, so he's working with these animals that he doesn't know their background at all. So he is just a really, really wonderful, gentle trainer, and it'll be great to have them both on today.
Terrific. And Jennifer, I know we were talking about, why don't we start with the CHA training tip of the month? That'll lead the way here. You know, we seem to be have started the conversation a little bit about emergency dismounts and getting off the horse successfully. So do you want to do that? Do you want to listen to Julie Goodnight, and then we'll come back and chat about it a bit?
Sounds wonderful.
All right, let's take a listen to Julie Goodnight.
I'm Julie Goodnight, and here's another safety tip brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. On rare occasions, you may need to dismount your horse unexpectedly, and we call that the emergency dismount. Keep in mind that in almost all instances, it's better for you to stay on the horse than jump off of him, but on occasion, you may need to know this, so it's a good thing to know and practice. The first thing you're going to do before you emergency dismount is kick both feet out of the stirrups. You certainly don't want your feet getting stuck in the stirrups on the way down. Then place your hands on the pommel of the saddle, protecting your stomach from the horn if you're riding in a Western saddle. And then you're going to kick your right leg high and up over the cantle of the saddle, being careful not to hit the back of the horse. And be sure to land facing forward with your knees bent so that you're prepared to move away from the horse as necessary. And one more warning of safety. Don't ever hang on to the reins as you jump off a horse or fall off a horse. It would be way too easy to pull the horse over on top of you. If you're needing to emergency dismount and get away from your horse, you need to get away, push yourself away, and let go of the reins at the same time.
But that's interesting, you know, what Julie was saying there. And I think a lot of people tend to want to go down on the belly side, right? They want to go belly towards the horse rather than getting away from the horse. They want to slide.
I would agree, Glenn, and that's just in regular dismounting alone. You know, people do. And I think that's kind of laziness on our part, right? A bit that, I mean, how many times have we done it? Let's just slide off our horse. Now, first of all, you've got the issue of if you're wearing a belt buckle or even just your regular buckle on your jeans, it can slice that leather of your saddle. pretty badly, whether you're riding English or Western, so now you're ruining your saddle. But I think worst case scenario is different things that can get hung up. You know, we've heard of stories of bra straps getting hung up on the ladies on the horn of the saddle, and now you're dangling, right, about 4 to 6 inches from the ground, and most of us don't do pull-ups every day, so we're not able to pull ourselves back up onto that horse. But unless something comes undone, which hopefully it does, we're kind of just ragdolls on the side of our horse. So that's one thing that's not good. Another thing is, you know, getting other parts of you caught. And I'm just going to mention really quick, there is a lawsuit going on. Nothing, thank goodness, to do with CHA, but I always find out about lawsuits kind of in the horse industry. I have a couple of equine lawyer friends, and I'll give them a call right before I go do a risk management talk. And I'll say, hey, you know, are there any current lawsuits that we need to know about? And this one right now is pending, or it might just be to the point of almost being complete. But there was a hunter-jumper trainer, and she did train all of her riders just to slide down off the horse. And this one young gal was sliding down off the horse. And for those of you that know what a peacock stirrup is, it's basically a quick-release stirrup where it has a rubber band that attaches to it so that if you're riding and accidentally fall from your horse and are not able to get both feet out of the stirrups and you get drugged, it will kick out your foot. The rubber band will actually come undone and your foot will kick out, so you'll be free from being drugged. Well, they have a little lip on the top of the stirrup and on the bottom where the rubber band attaches to it. As this young lady was sliding down, she got, well, her female anatomy caught on that and it tore a little bit. So needless to say, yeah, sliding down on the belly, not smart. Yes.
Thank
you. Right hip. Face forward. Face forward. Have your shoulders always stay the holder.
If that doesn't motivate you to face forward, nothing will.
Yes.
Well, I think emergency
forward
dismount
is
I think emergency dismount is something that most people don't think about practicing. It just doesn't occur to you. But it probably is good to practice it on a regular basis. Make sure. And the older you get, the harder it gets. As we found out.
Yes.
Getting older, yeah.
I think so. And if you're all going to practice it, everyone listening, please practice it first at the halt. Practice it at the stop,
probably.
And then move on to walk, and then maybe sitting trot if you want to. You know, if you have really young teenagers and they've been riding a really long time, you can certainly even practice it at the canter. But I would highly recommend halt first, then maybe walk, and go a little bit more if you really feel like you need to. Because there's muscle memory, even if you have to do it, you know, in an emergency dead run situation, if heaven forbid that happens to you. There's muscle memory just from having practiced it at the halt and the walk that will probably kick in without having to practice it at after speed.
Yeah, it will apply. Having tried it, it will apply. So talk about a little bit for folks who may not be familiar with the emergency dismount or perhaps are familiar with it, but not in its correct form, because a lot of folks figure an emergency dismount is just kicking your feet out of the stirrups and getting off the horse in a hurry. But there are a few parts of this method that are really, really key. One of them we just talked about, sliding down so that when you land, you're facing the same direction as your horse. But what are some of the other really important key things that we should keep in mind when practicing or teaching an emergency dismount? From the point of view that we're trying to make getting off that horse as safe as we possibly can.
Absolutely, Jennifer. And I think the hardest thing about doing this is getting our leg high enough over the cantle, which is the back of your saddle. So I highly recommend to people, if you have access to an English saddle or if you have access to a horse that's fine with you being on in a bareback pad, great way to start learning this at the halt. Because then you don't have to worry about that cantle, and you can kind of work on getting your hip up and over high enough. As we get older or as we have body soreness, that's a hard thing to do. And so I think that's really smart. And we jump off primarily on the left side because that's what the horse is used to. But by all means, if you have a horse that's desensitized to you getting on and off on both sides, which is a great thing to do with your horse, then please practice this from both directions. I think getting off on both sides is super. But then if you only ride in a Western saddle and that's really what you need to do, again, practice this from the halt because you want to be able to grab that mane, put your other hand, so your left hand goes on the mane with the reins, your right hand goes on the horn, and then you take both feet out of the stirrups, then you take that right leg and you go up and over the cantle. So you've got to lean forward a little bit, and that's where the leaning forward might cause you know, your clothing, especially if it's not tucked in, like the bottom of your shirt or jacket or whatever, to get caught on your saddle horn. So, you know, really be cognizant of having your other hand over the horn so that that doesn't happen.
Good idea. You don't want to be getting caught up in your favorite riding shirt. Now, is an emergency dismount something that should be taught early on, for example, when you're a brand sparkling new beginner? Should that not happen until the riders become more experienced? What do you think?
You know, I teach emergency dismount your first lesson from halt. Because, Jen, to be quite honest with you, I don't know when emergency is going to happen, right? So
that's
your emergency might
emergency.
Happen on your first lesson. Yeah,
right.
I mean, you just don't know. So even though I'm hoping to put you on the most broke school horses I have and that everything's going to go fine, we're going to have a small arena space, everything, still don't know. So, you know, the turkey might still fly out of the bush, right, Glenn? You just don't know. So with that being said, I teach it at halt, their very, very first lesson, whether they're youth, kids, or adults. But, again, it's at the halt. And then we might not work on it at the walk until quite a few lessons. And we're certainly not going to work on it at trot until quite a while later. But I think that it's very important, much like the pulley rein that we went over in a previous episode, which is the emergency stop, that I also teach the very first lesson because, again, you just don't know. And like Julie said on the CHA safety tip, you'd rather stay up than come down if at all possible.
Very good. Well, it's time for me to get hold of our first guest, Ken. So I'm going to head off into the studio, and Glenn and you are going to chat about this. Maybe you can talk a little bit about interesting and fun ways to practice this skill, because emotionally and subconsciously, I'm going to practice the emergency dismount. You don't want to keep reinforcing the whole concept of an emergency attack going to happen any second. So mounted games are something that you see a lot of mounting and dismounting on purpose that this same skill set can come in really handy.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, you remember, Glenn and Jen, how a couple of weeks ago we had, or sorry, months ago, we did the vaulting episode. Well, this is in vaulting, whether you're on a vaulting horse, which is the third single in the pad, or whether you have a vaulting barrel. Boy, what a great thing to practice on a barrel first, if you have access to it, before you get on the horse. And then with the vaulting third single in the pad, you don't have the cantle back of the saddle issue to worry about. So I think that that's great if you have access to either of those. And then, oh, my gosh, Jen brought up mounted games. We could talk about that forever. This last week at the clinic, we had this great lesson on mounted games. You can do Simon Says. You can do Ride a Buck, where you put the dollar bill either under your thigh or under your calf. You can do Egg and Spoon, though I recommend the egg be hard-boiled. You can do Water Race, though I recommend desensitizing your horse to the water hitting its shoulder before you actually have the water drop on it. But all these games that you can do from walk to trot to canter. So you can start them really, really good with a complete beginner, and then you can go all the way up to them being really, really advanced. So it's great fun. And what we're going to do today, I think one of the biggest things is when people say, I've gotten bucked off a horse, right? I think that when people say that they've fallen, a lot of times they assume they got bucked off. And today, Ken and Brent are both going to explain that an actual buck is a very different thing than a kicking out to the leg or maybe a spook that might have occurred or something else. So that misnomer of what a buck actually is, we're going to get into detail on that too. So a lot of good things that we're going to chat about today.
You know, and actually most riders we've seen through the years, that especially trail riders, that end up on the ground are from their horses just ducking out or a crow hop, not actually a buck, but a crow hop, or the horses just duck out from under them and they're left on their butt in the ground. So you're right. It isn't from actual bucking that happens.
Right. I mean, bucking is like Professional Rodeo Cowboy Association bucking, like you see at the National Finals Rodeo. That's bucking, right, where the horse's head is in between its knees all the way to the ground and the legs are all the way up in the air. I mean, that is true, true bucking. When they just, like you said, Glenn, crow hop, they're kind of lifting their back up a little bit. Or if they kick out to the leg, that's actually normally a refusal to go forward. That's, I don't feel like going forward today. I'm kind of lazy. I'm just going to kick out to the leg. So definite differences of those things.
We had an Appaloosa that was a great riding horse, big Appaloosa. I mean, this horse was huge, a barrel. And he was great for trail riding. I rode him, and he was great for trail riding. We would put the kids up on him. But there was, about once every couple days when he would go out for a trail ride, he would decide, I'm just going to – he would lull you into that sense of security, and then out in the middle of the trail, he would do that out of nowhere – little crow hop that would send you to the ground. And he did it with experienced riders, with novice riders. It didn't matter. And it only happened like once in a while, but it was when you were least expecting it. And he just did it, I think, to do it. And then after that, he was fine. You get back on and you could ride again. But you never knew when it was coming. It was just
you know what, Glenn? I think he did it for his own entertainment.
Yes, that's what with him I think it was, because he kind of had that personality. His name was Chip, and he kind of lived up to his name because he had that personality that he would be perfectly fine, the best horse you ever rode, and then it was just a little crow hop, but it got you unseated because you weren't expecting it. You were just, oh, this is great. I'm having a good time, and I don't have to think about it much, and then all of a sudden you're on the ground.
I have an Appaloosa named Chip.
Oh, really?
I sure do. Chip off the dot is actually his official name. But, yes, his name is Chip.
Is he as big as a house like ours was?
He's almost 16 hands and weighs probably 1,200 pounds. He's good size.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know what it is about Appaloosa's name Chip, but they do like to eat. well, our first guest
yes,
is ready.
Do.
If you want to introduce Ken.
Oh, I would love to. Ken Najorka. I have known Ken for quite a few years. We invited him to one of our international conferences when we were in Florida. He came down and did an amazing demonstration on reining, and then we come to find out that Ken knows a whole lot more than just about reining. He has worked with intercollegiate teams and high school teams in both English and Western and jumping. Ken is a certified instructor with us, a master Western instructor, and he is also our regional director for that area. So he puts on a regional conference. He'll actually be having one in January that I'm sure he'll talk about a bit. And he's currently at the Oaks Equestrian Center in Lake City. Hello, Ken. How are you?
Good morning, Christy. How are you doing?
I am doing great. And Glenn and I and Jen are so happy to have you on the show today.
I'm looking forward to it. It's an honor to be able to talk to everyone and share some time with you guys.
Well, super. What we're going to talk about today is mounted issues in the saddle. And Glenn and Jen and I have already been sharing some of the tales that we've had because, most of the time, if you're going to do this sport, right, things are going to happen, just like if you're going to ski or rock climb or whatever sport you choose, things are going to happen. And it's so much fun to be able to know ahead of time, to be able to prevent the things, or to be able, if they do occur, to know what to do to be able to be as safe as possible. So
oh, yes.
If you're okay with it, we thought we'd go ahead and just kind of start with you telling us generally what are some of the issues that you have seen and what are some of the ways that riders can fix those issues?
Oh, gosh. Through the years with all the different styles of riding and the different people that I've worked with, when we look at, the horses, bucking or bolting or having, kicking issues or things of that nature, most of the time, it seems to always like lean back toward what the rider is doing. So I spend a lot of time seeing working with the riders. This weekend I was up in Connecticut and working right back to the same thing. It was more with the different horses working on the rider's balance. And as we all get younger, the balance seems to be a tougher thing to work on. But the more that we can keep in balance with these guys, the better they seem to do.
Absolutely. So what I'd love to start with, we talk about horse behavior, Ken, and we talk about how the horse's natural reaction when something goes awry is to run away because they're pretty fast and they can normally get away from danger by running. So I think what happens to most of us, probably the most when we start riding, is a spook or what we call a shy. So could you kind of let us know, first of all, maybe how to stay in the saddle best when that does occur, the different kinds of things the horse might do when they spook and shy, and how to stay centered and balanced during those things?
You got it. you know, the more we ride, we all seem to kind of forget the basics. Horses, you know, it's flight before fight. So, you know, they can do a quarter mile run before they even realize what's going on. I guess most of my riders, we fluctuate in age. We're all over, and it doesn't matter the age. What we always need to think about, even if we're trail riding, is especially like when we're trail riding, we seem to get a little lazy in what we're doing. We're having fun, having a good time. But, you know, sitting up tall, staying centered over that horse, and the old popular, you know, heels down, toes up, when you're in that position, if you get your body where you're, no matter what you do, and I think we have to fight it forever, I call it like anti-high heel. You girls have it rougher than us guys do. We've got to always think about keeping those heels down, because when it does, it helps keep your backside down in that seat, kind of like in the pocket of the saddle. So if something goes wrong, it gives you a better shot. Yeah, so most of the time when I see people that fall off their horses or something happens, the riders are leaning over, or I watch them going down the trail and their heels are up and their toes are down, and I kind of look at when the heels are up, it kind of turns that saddle into a little ejection seat. So one little boo or, you know, Fluffy jumps over a couple feet and gets startled, you're out of there. You're not in position. So it's like, to me, when we're riding, no matter what, we always need to constantly be thinking about our seat, where our body is positioned. You know, sitting down on your pockets. That way you're deep in the seat, and it keeps you safe. Even we're trail riding and you're riding along, I call it a little bit of like the lazy position. When you're sitting down low, the comfort position, that keeps you safe, but you still got to keep those heels down. And then think about where your legs are. You know, the imaginary straight line that runs from the shoulder down through the hip and then down through the heel. That helps you to be able, if something were to go wrong, to be able to chew the horse's leg, control the legs of the horse, to move the hips or move the barrel or move the front shoulders around a little if you need to. If you're relaxed and you're lazy and your feet are up by those shoulders, by the time you're able to respond to get yourself back in position, it's too late.
You're right, Ken, and that brings up a really good point. You know, I think when we practice in the arena, or if all you have is access to the trail, when we practice on the trail, just that, you know, nice walk or what have you, it's so good to be able to practice things like disengaging the haunches or disengaging the forehand, moving that horse. It's also such a good idea, I think, to be able to have our riders work with no stirrups and even one stirrup, because what's the reality? If a horse spooks, you might lose a stirrup and you might only lose one. So isn't it a great idea to stay balanced with no stirrup? Yep. Or one stirrup as well?
Yeah, one stirrup, one rein, reins break. Most of my students, I guess I ride so many horses with problems that I try to remember what everybody else is like. So I never really get, when I trail ride, I don't get to be able to just relax. It's like you ride the good Fluffy, and then I get handed the horse that's got the issues. So, but it makes me, when I watch the other people, I think about that, you know, riding with one rein, riding with one stirrup. You know, it's not uncommon for my students to have to be able to do everything with one rein and no stirrups, you know, to be able to stop them, to move the hips around, to move the shoulders around, and bottom line, to be able to control the feet. That way you can keep yourself out of trouble.
I agree. And could we now talk a little bit about bucking versus kicking out to the leg versus crow hopping? I think that there's a big difference between those, and I think a lot of times riders don't understand those and how to deal with those. because I think a lot of times kicking out to the leg, ironically enough, is laziness. It's not, you know, hi-ho, silver, I want to get you off. It's a refusal to go forward, like I don't feel like working today. So we could talk a little bit about those.
You know, it's really funny. When I do my clinics and when I'm traveling around, no matter what style horse that you handed me to work with, you know, a Pasofino or a walking horse, or like this weekend I was working with some Mustang horses and Gypsy Vanners. The thing that seems to be taken away, or whether it was taught into the horses or people have accidentally taken it away, is forward motion. If you have a horse that's bolting or spooking, bucking, kicking, they can't do this if we have them moving in a forward direction. It makes it harder, I should say. It makes it a lot harder for the horse. And so if I have a horse that doesn't want to go forward, I'll go back to doing groundwork a little bit or teaching the horse the cues. And that's the other part, is so often people just get on the horse and just kick it and go. So the horses really don't understand, or they're saying, hey, this hurts, man. I'm gonna argue with you. I don't like this. They don't want to fight, but we would need to be able to control their feet. So if we can get the horse moving in a forward direction, you can help prevent, like, the bucking, horses that rear up. All of it are lack of forward motion. If you get a horse that's, like, say, kicking out, that you're talking about, is he kicking out from a fly and you really didn't pay attention to it? Or did you accidentally, so many in the Western world, with reining becoming so popular and the speed events becoming so popular, so many people ride in spurs. And again, right back to not having the correct leg control with the heels down and the toes up to be able to control that spur, that, you know, the horse being accidentally, you know, poked in the side, or, I like to say they get stabbed like by a pencil or something. They're going, ouch, we don't like that, you know. So when we're teaching, and if we get a horse that does kick out, I need to either work with the rider to teach them to control their legs better, or I work with the horse from the ground and teach them that they can handle that pressure. They can handle something on their sides so they don't kick out, to make it safer. But, you know, a lot of people, they consider it like a refusal, and yes, the horses are refusing, but I always ask, why are they refusing? Do they not understand what we're asking? Or are they saying, ouch, man, that hurts. You know, back off. Don't stick me so hard, or don't hit me so hard.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, when I teach beginners, Ken, and I know you're the same way, yeah, no spur for you. Until you've learned how to ride properly with your leg. Here's a little crop with absolutely no handle that can even go around your wrist, so that you can go ahead and make the horse go faster on the shoulder if you need to, and then you can drop it, right? Because once it's out of your hands, it's not flapping around. And then same thing with the spur. You can't drop the spur very well when it's attached to your leg. So I'm with you. I think spurs are definitely for the more advanced folks, not for the beginner.
So much of this, spurs are definitely, you have to know how to use them. They're a tool. That's all they are, is a tool, you know, to help you do your job. But the other thing we have to think about is a lot of the, you can have good horses, or I see a lot, they're good show horses that are going on and they're being trail ride horses and they've got years under saddle, but they really haven't been taught to handle situations. So, you know, you need to teach them, a lot of people like to say desensitize. You need to teach them that they can handle the pressure. To move their body parts around. And that's a lot of times where you get a good horse that will kind of kick out or will buck a little bit. A great example is so many people are buying up really nice reining horses and think they can go do anything. Well, so many reining horses are not taught to even handle a whip. So you tap them with a whip, and they just don't understand it. So a good horse that would normally just say lope right off or will buck on you. So you have to kind of desensitize and let them know that it's okay, that these tools that you're using are okay. Same with, like, say, if you get one that is crow hopping, and this is all the stuff that I look at, more of, is it the horse's fault? Is the saddle fitting correctly? Is the saddle in the right position? What is irritating them that's making them, and that's the other part I look at, what is making them want to crow hop? I had one this weekend that we were, and it was actually a lower level CHA instructor had come to me for some help, and we looked at the horse. The horse is kind of refusing, not wanting to go, and it took me a little bit of kind of working with the horse, and I kept trying to figure out, okay, you know, I could tell it wasn't the horse itself. And what we narrowed it down to, the curb strap was on too tight. She was riding in a Western bit that had a little bit of, very mild, but it had a little bit of a shank and a curb chain. And when we loosened that up, the horse was able to go forward. And I was kind of like the miracle man, and all I did is loosen up the chain. So these are the little things we look at, like if they're bucking or rearing, you know, what is it that outside of the horse and its training that could be causing the problem?
Absolutely, and I think that is huge. You could talk for hours on saddle fit and positioning of the saddle. I think so many times people put, you know, the saddle so far forward that it impedes the horse's shoulder because the saddle has to be back behind the scapula of the horse.
Yep.
And they put
it
on top of that scapula, right? Absolutely.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden that horse is like, every time it brings its shoulder back, ouch. Okay, that doesn't hurt.
Yep.
That kind of hurts. And then they start short striding. And then we sit there and go, oh, we know this horse has a lovely trot. We've seen it when we're lunging it. Let's make it go faster. And then we start to kick it, try to make it go faster. And then what happens? The horse gets upset by that. So absolutely right.
Yeah.
I love that you brought up tack fit. Tack fit is huge. And I think a lot of people tend to not know enough about that. And we can always learn more.
Yeah, most of my clinics, I probably spend a quarter of the time just discussing tack fit. Because majority of the time, if you give me 10 riders in the ring, I'll probably have to adjust tack to fit the horse on 7 of them. It's crazy as it sounds, even with advanced riders, you know, they get the wrong stuff or the saddle works for the other horse and it's comfortable and it fits me, but it doesn't fit the horse, or they just forgot to readjust the bridle because they were using it on another horse the day before. Silly little things that can, and that's what I do, is if I eliminate all of that, then I can go forward and now start teaching the horse to go forward, which would eliminate the horse with, you know, the rearing or the bucking or, and then it makes it more, and they're happier.
Absolutely, and I think if we can palpate, oh, go ahead, I'm sorry, Ken, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead, you got it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and I think sometimes, you know, we also need to palpitate the horse itself, because sometimes the horse has a sore back or sore loins or something else is going on, and that can also cause some of these things.
Yep, and a lot of people, I don't, what makes, and I'm being very honest, it's my veterinarians and my farrier that make me look good when I'm showing and competing. When a horse comes in for training, the first week it's here, the vet and the farrier, they look at it. We go through the teeth. We go through the back. My sports medicine vet, I'm probably going to put one of his kids through college, but it's just a lifesaver. With helping, you know, if these horses are feeling good, then I know they're ready to go to work.
That's right. And I'll tell you, if they're not ready to go to work, then that's when the issue is. And that is not always just, oh, I'm mentally not ready to go to work. Normally, horses are more than willing to do what we want. Horses are actually, I think, the most forgiving creatures ever. Back when I was learning how to ride and I was a young girl, I was probably 13, 14, I rode on the Arabian circuit, and I remember I didn't know any better, and I put the curb chain on, but instead of flattening it out by going all the way to the right and having it be nice and smooth, I would just put it on. And so there goes the curb chain just on, and now it's jabbing the horse, you know, every time that I would use the reins in any way. And my trainer said, well, Christy, you kind of have to make it go all the way to the right and make it smooth. And I went, oh, there you go. Right? But, and then the horse, the minute we made it all the way smooth, forgave all of those things, stopped tossing the head, went right into the bridle nicely, and everything was fine. They are such forgiving animals. It's just wonderful.
You got it. And, a gentleman told me once, it was like, horses, they never forget, but they always forgive.
Yes.
And I've yet to have one that has not been willing to forgive, maybe at different levels. But, and with time, they'll always forgive you. But they never forget. If you've done something that's, you know, painful or something, it may take a while before they'll let it go. So, but they will.
So. Absolutely. So, Ken, I know you just recently had a move. Can you tell us a little bit about your new place and how people can find you?
Oh, my goodness gracious. I have been so incredibly blessed. The good Lord is just looking out for me. I have been very fortunate to coach and do a lot of neat things with colleges and build in other facilities. But now I've relocated and I've moved up to the Oaks Equestrian Center, which is in Lake City. Four or five years ago, it's where we had our international conference for CHA. And the Oaks Equestrian Center, it was originally designed for the O'Connors, Karen and David O'Connor. It's just beyond beautiful. We've got 33 stalls, covered arena. We've got three arenas, and the third one will be finished for raining. We've got I get my numbers wrong, between 8 and 15 miles of manicured and groomed trails. It's just an incredible place to be, and it is designed to be an equestrian center. So it's like if you, or an equestrian community. So it's like if you want to build a house here, have your own barn. It's on 1,200 acres. It's just absolutely incredible. And what we're going to do here is, we're going to keep the jump course open. We're going to keep everything going strong. We're going to do a lot of reining horse shows, a lot of different competitions that way. We're going to bring in anyone that's a clinician that wants to come to Florida and put on a clinic, or you have a group that wants to do competitions, pick up the phone, drop me an email, and we'll gladly set it up. We're going to be doing 100 paces, stadium jumping. We're having, in a couple weeks, a competitive trail ride here, we do weddings. This place is so beautiful, and I kind of tell everybody to go to the website and just get an idea, and it's the oakslakecity.com, or you can go, Facebook is the best. You can find me on Facebook under Ken Najorka, or the Jorka Performance Horses, or the Oaks Equestrian Center, and it'll just, I've got tons of pictures that you can see everything that is available here.
And what's so great, Ken, is that if people want to come onto the CHA website, because Ken's going to be hosting a regional conference for CHA, where there's a lot of education and networking, and you don't have to be an instructor to attend either our international conference or our regional conferences. They're open to everybody. Come and play with Ken at the Oaks Equestrian Center in January. We just so appreciate you being on the show today, Ken, and I'm so excited to hopefully be able to come out there in January myself and see you.
That's it. I'm looking forward to it. We'll have Christy out here, and my goal is to probably have at least 15 other guest speakers for the weekend, and we'll be riding and bringing a lot of different styles of competitors and educators, for everyone to learn, whether you're a horse person or not a horse person. So.
Wonderful. Glenn, do you have any other questions for Ken today?
No, I think you guys covered it very well. And it is a beautiful place. I know I was familiar with it when the O'Connors were involved way back at the beginning of it. And it's in Florida. How could you go wrong?
Your neck of the woods.
That's right. Right down the street.
It's being in Lake City, it's close enough to everyone and ready for a lot of fun times.
That's not too far off the highway, is it? It's off of 75?
Oh, it's about like 5 minutes. You can actually, through the woods, see I-75. I think 20 minutes from the Florida-Georgia line. So it's like we've got several airports. You've got Jacksonville, Gainesville, several hotels. Within the next couple of weeks, we'll have it set up for, you know, if you're coming in town, we're going to do a horse hotel. So you can leave your horses here while you go down to Disney or go over to St. Augustine for whatever events that you want to do. So we've arranged quite a bit with the whole area here is just beyond spectacular for helping and entertaining between the hotels and other groups. It's just great. So, you know, we're really going to try to just have a lot of fun here and do a lot of neat stuff. So.
Very good. Well, Ed, we appreciate you joining us here this morning, and good luck with the new project. It sounds like fun.
Oh, thank you very much, and looking forward to a lot of good times with everybody.
Bye, Ken.
All right, let's do this. We have our next guest standing by. We're going to take a little break here for our song of the day, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk some more about the issues under saddle with Brent Winston from Colorado, Harmony Equine Center, and everything that's going on out there. But first, we're going to hear I'm Gonna Fly with Casey Smith. We'll be right back after this.
I've always been the shy, quiet type, biding my time until the time was right. Driving through life with one foot on the brake, missed every chance that I did not take. Now I'm gonna do whatever I please. No, nothing's gonna have a hold on me.
Cause I'm gonna fly.
Casey Smith with I'm Gonna Fly. You can find all of her music at CaseyWithAKSmith.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I'm here with Christy from the Certified Horsemanship Association, and we are here for our training day that happens on the first Tuesday of every, or the third Tuesday of every month. Did I get it right this time, Christy? I know I have been wrong in the past. Okay, good. Yeah, I've been wrong in the past. I keep saying Thursday, but it's actually only Tuesday. I'm sleep deprived. I have an excuse today.
So you do.
All right, let's get on to our next guest.
We are very excited to have Brent Winston on. He is from the Harmony Equine Center, which is owned by the Denver Dumb Friends League here in Colorado. And it's going to be great to hear a little bit more about Harmony. It's a pretty brand new facility, as equine facilities go, and their mission is amazing. And they are located in right south of Denver is where they are. And Brent has been with them as their head trainer. And his before he came on as their head trainer, he was a two-time finalist for the Extreme Mustang Makeover. He also was an outfitter and a guide. He has done all kinds of different work with great horsemen such as Ray Hunt and Tom Dorrance. He's also done some assistant training for rain cow horse trainers and things along those lines. So he's very well versed. Brent, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
And we are thrilled. We just recently site accredited Glenn and Jen, the Harmony Equine Center through CHA. They literally got 100% of everything correct. We normally allow 100% of the mandatory requirements have to be met and 80% of the recommended, and, you know, they just did 100 on both. So pleasure to have them as part of the CHA family. And, Brent, today we're going to talk a little bit about some issues that can happen under saddle. And I know kind of with your background and things, I think what would really be helpful to the listeners, Ken was talking, our first guest, a little bit about disengagement. You know, when the horse is starting to get a little bit tight or a little bit upset, how do we do exercises at home where we can teach our horses to disengage? What is that whole concept of disengagement and what are some specific exercises to help us?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a good question. I really think the disengagement goes back to something that Ken was talking about is controlling the feet. I think that's where it starts. You know, if our horse is getting tight and our horse is ignoring us or kind of focusing on something that's going to be getting upset or upsetting them, we're not in control of their feet anymore. They've taken control back of their own feet and they've tuned us out. So I think disengaging the hindquarters is a great way to reestablish a little bit of control of the feet. Even if you're only getting control of one inside hind leg for a second, then you might get them to loosen up and relax and step that leg through and you've got both. That being said, I think it also helps them relax. Once you kind of get their head bent a little bit and get those hindquarters moving off your leg, they're going to eventually loosen up those loins and loosen up those hips and then take a breath and relax. Even if it's just for a second, I think you can get that back, and I think that's a great safety tool, especially on a touchy horse. Maybe it's the first time out riding outside or in a different new situation or something like that. I have yet to find a horse that could buck me off whenever I've got their hindquarters going around me controlled. So I like to practice that a lot by really picking up on a rein and waiting for an ear flick or just a nose tip my direction. And then I'll put my leg lightly on at first, and then more and more and more and more and more until I get the desired response. But I only start lightly first, and then I'm sure that I take away the pressure as soon as I feel that hip starting to move. Even if they don't completely disengage at first while I'm practicing at home, I like to take that pressure off as soon as I feel that hip move away from my leg, because pretty soon I feel like I'm going to have a horse that's going to completely disengage with just the smallest hint from me to do it. And I feel like a horse that's understanding that small of a hint is also confident because they're going to understand what I want without me having to really get after them and go for it hard that way.
Brent, you brought up a really good point about breath and relaxation, right? It's really good for the rider to breathe. We talk about that a lot, right? If you tighten up, of course, in your body, you're going to be a tight rider. But
really good for our horses to breathe too. And, you know, we've heard this thing a lot of times about the whole licking and chewing. Could you talk a little bit more about signs of when a horse is breathing and more relaxed versus when they're uptight and stiff?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of the signs I look for could be any of them. Licking and chewing is a real obvious one. I can spot that from on top of their back or on the ground. And, you know, if you ride enough tight horses and then you ride enough relaxed horses, you learn how to feel it whenever they just take a breath and relax, and you know if they're licking or chewing or not. Also, you know, I think if a horse is blinking their eyes, I think that that's a good sign that they're relaxed enough to actually shut their eye for a second and take it off of whatever's upsetting them or you or whatever you're doing. And moving free, I think whenever they're moving free, they're relaxed, they're breathing. Cocking a hind leg is a good one as well. And to me, head position is pretty crucial as well. Whenever I walk up to catch some of these horses that haven't been touched by people a lot, I mean, their head's elevated to the elevation of a passenger plane, and that's not a very relaxed horse. And if I'm able to touch the horse at that point, man, they're just hard as a rock. I mean, you could bounce quarters off of them. I mean, they're just really hard, really tight. Then as that head comes down, they start relaxing, and their muscles will soften up, and they don't look near as tight or feel near as tight either.
Absolutely. And, you know, I had mentioned earlier in the show that I rode a rear once on purpose. I just didn't know how to get the horse to come back down out of that rear, and then learned, the withers was how this particular horse was trained. But could you tell us a little bit about rearing as a vice and some things to help if anyone out there has a horse that rears, or what your thoughts are on that?
Oh, rearing's a hard one. I think rearing's the most scariest, dangerous thing that a horse can do. If they come over on you, I think that's about as bad as it gets. Well, like Ken mentioned earlier, I think the first thing is forward movement. A horse can't rear if he's going forward. So if he's fighting his forward movement and rearing up on you to kind of not go forward, I would search and search and search. I'd like to give the horse the benefit of the doubt. You guys talked about tack fit. I would certainly look at that. And then maybe get back on the ground and ask your horse to go forward on the ground before he got back on, because they may be sore somewhere, or if they're just not going forward, then you just go ahead and make them go forward on the ground first and then wait for them to loosen up and free up those feet and get moving. Also, I found with a lot of people that I instruct, when a horse is rearing up on them, they're asking for forward, but they're not allowing the forward. They say go. Nope, I was just kidding. Don't go. Don't really go. And then the horse gets confused, and the next thing they're actually driving him up into a rear. So I say, you know, even English people a lot, they're riding in contact, and I ride in contact sometimes, but they're too much contact for that particular horse to feel like it can move forward and drive into that contact and drive into that bit at this point of the game. So I'll tell them go to the buckle or drop your hands, get them reins droopy, and go, because odds are they're actually pulling that horse up. Another thing that I do a lot to prevent rearing is whenever I feel like those front feet are getting light, I disengage and I move those hindquarters. I get them freed up. I don't know of any horse athletic enough to rear up on me whenever his back feet, the motor, is moving around in a circle to the outside. So those are some of the things that I really noticed with rearing. I would check and make sure that he's not sore somewhere on his back, and make sure that my tack's fitting properly. I like to give him the benefit of the doubt first, and then I can train going from there once I'm confident that the horse is not in any kind of pain.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that I think, too, would be a really good thing to talk about, you know, herd behavior with horses, right? They always want to be with your buddies. And sometimes we want to go and leave. We want to actually get on our horse and leave the property and go down the road on a trail ride. Or let's say even in the group riding lesson world that I just came from, because we just certified 8 instructors this last week, every now and then that instructor would pull a horse away from the herd and do some sort of a little maybe private thing with that horse. And then the whole time, right, that horse is wanting to get back to their buddies. So what are some things about barn sourness that you would recommend to people?
Oh, Barn Sour. That's a fun one. That's a fun one. Barn Sour and Buddy Sour, you know, it can be a process. On a young horse, if I'm going out for the first time, I'm usually going to have one of their buddies there with me. Hopefully it's a horse broker than the one I'm riding on. They can add a calming influence on me and help keep my colt or my horse that I'm riding a little bit more calm, a little bit more secure, because, like you mentioned, they're going to feel more secure in that herd environment. So what I'll do with a horse like that is I'll go ride out, and once I feel like my horse is pretty relaxed, then I'm going to ride away, do a mini project like you said, and then ride back. If all they can think about is going back to their buddies, then what I'll do is I'll have somebody that can ride a little bit, just hold their horse, or hold the buddy horse, if you will, and I'm going to trot circles, and I'm going to make them work, and I'm going to disengage the hindquarters, and I'm going to work the shoulders over, and then I'm going to trot more circles, and I'm going to make it a lot of work, and as soon as that horse just thinks about leaving, I'm going to relax, drop everything, no pressure and no work right here. I'll do the same thing back at the barn. It's real common that people will go out and they'll go for a ride and they'll work their horse, and that horse is going to pick up his pace walking home. I always make them all walk home, but he's going to pick up his pace. He's going to be in a little bit more of a hurry. Then he's going to get back to the barn. We're going to get off. We're going to brush him, and we're going to put him back out with his buddies and give him a load of grain and put him right back out at the hay feeder. Well, it won't take a good horse any time at all to figure out, hey, home's way better than out. So what I do a lot of times, I try to prevent it, but if it's already became an issue, I'll let that horse come back to the barn. And in most cases, I won't even start a fight with him out there in the pasture. You know, I'll disengage him and try to keep him safe and keep him soft, and I'll trot figure eights and things like that. But I certainly won't just get in their face and pull on them to make them walk. If they need to trot, they can trot on home. And then when we get home, that's when the work starts. I'm going to lope circles for half an hour, 25 minutes or more until my horse calms down. I'm going to sit there and leave them tied up after I'm done with that, or put them on a hot walker. Anything really I can do to make being at home and being in the barn more work than it is relaxing and going for a nice trail ride. And I think that you can prevent it and cause it as well, you know. So I'm real cognizant of not even letting it get started on horses that I start. Now, horses that have already done it, it's been caused. You bring them home, put them back out with their buddies. They're in love with their buddies. And take off your saddle, because we're all busy. You take off your saddle, you brush them, you give them a bath, whatever. Everything good is happening when the ride is over. Not so much good is happening when there is a ride, and it doesn't take them long to get herd sour, barn sour at all that way. That answer your question? Kind of.
No, it sure does, Brent. No, absolutely, and I think that that's huge. You know, you have to make home a little bit more work than out, so that after time they go, oh, out is good. And, you know, we had talked about that we wanted to do mainly mounted stuff on this, but I'll tell you, something that we haven't brought up in any of our shows yet, and I think you're the perfect person to bring it up, that's why I added it to this show, is sometimes we want to leave our property. We want to get in the trailer and go somewhere. We don't want to just go down the road we've ridden all the time. And I know you do a ton with trailer loading. And for folks that are having issues, you know, getting their horse in a trailer so that we can go out and experience things besides our own property, what are some causes and solutions, and what recommendations do you have there?
As far as getting in the horse trailer?
Yeah, for the horses that don't want to load. They just say, you know what, okay. I know where my buddies are. I'm going to stay right here. Thank you very much.
sure, absolutely. Well, the first thing that you would want to do is figure out the cause. You know, is my horse never been in a trailer? Is he afraid of it? Like many of the horses I get here at Harmony, they've never been loaded. So I can really take my time and develop that and teach them how to get into the trailer. I like to teach them all so I can send them in. But that's the process. It doesn't happen overnight. Also, what I used to do a lot of whenever the regular straight load two-horse trailers were around is I'd back one up, and they're still around. You just see a lot of other kinds of trailers. I'd back one up to my horse's pen, and I'd feed them in there. let them know that in the trailer is a good place to be. You know, it takes a lot of the work off of you. You don't have to lock them in there or anything like that. Just put their feet up there and let them know it's in there. You know, I'd start as a progression, you know, put in a little bit so they got to get their front feet in there, and then they learn that that's where it is, and then eventually work it on so that the horse has to step all 4 feet in there, and then they just learn to be comfortable in that trailer, that it's a good place. There's going to be a little bit of food in there. It's not a big, scary, dark tin can that they're jumping into or anything like that. It's a nice place. As far as the horse that doesn't want to get into the trailer because they don't want to leave their buddies, that one's a little bit tougher. What I used to do is I used to teach the move them around and lunge them and make outside the trailer a lot of work, and then as soon as they make a motion towards the trailer that it's not going to be work. And I still do that quite a bit. The thing that I've noticed, though, is people are kind of getting in a big hurry, and they're putting the purpose before the principle. So what they're looking after is that they're wanting to get the horse in the trailer, get it in there now. They don't recognize the small little signs that say, well, my horse is thinking about getting in the trailer, I should reward this. So I kind of got away from that just a little bit, making it work outside and then putting the pressure off of them whenever they make an effort towards the trailer. I think the best way, and we do it out here quite a bit, you know, just to try to maintain a low-stress environment on these horses, is I'll jump up in the trailer, or I'll get somebody up in the trailer, and we'll get a flag with somebody else behind them, and we'll stand 15, 20 feet back. We don't even have to get right up on them. And just have somebody shake that flag. And as soon the horse is going to back up, he's going to move sideways, he's going to do all kinds of things. I'll maintain the pressure on the lead rope from inside the trailer, and they'll maintain the pressure with the flag from behind, and as soon as the horse even thinks about stepping forward, pressure stops. And really, in just a few short minutes, I've noticed, in most cases, that horse is going to start really thinking about, well, the pressure is everywhere but at this trailer, so I'm going to think about getting in here and not fighting. And with a horse that's kind of gotten a little bit spoiled to it, plan on it being a little bit of work, you know, call the neighbor kid up and buy him a Pepsi and give him $10 and have him sit back there and hold the flag for a couple afternoons. And usually that's going to help fix your problem. The other problem that I see a lot of is nobody wants to load their horse until they're ready to go somewhere. And I've done it myself. Yeah. Whenever I used to rodeo and things like that, I'd get off work and be Friday night, and I got to drive across 2 states with my horse and go, and we got to get going and hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. No, the horse ain't going to get in the trailer. Or there's an emergency, there's a fire. We got to get in, we got to get in. Well, we've never practiced it. We don't practice. So nobody loads their horse until it's time to go somewhere, and then every time they load their horse, they go somewhere, and it's work. And the horse is going to go, nah, I just ain't going to get in today. And, I mean, they are horses. They make liars out of us. And I think the more that you'll actually practice and do that, the better success you're going to have moving forward.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what I loved what you said is, you know, you have to have the principles down before the purpose. You can't just say,
right,
you got to get in right now. We're just got to go. I love that saying. I might use that one, French.
Yep.
I'm going to plagiarize that one. That was really good.
I think Ray Hunt said that, you know, don't put the purpose before the principle. And I always look at that with anything I'm doing training horses. Okay, I'm going to start teaching this horse to spin. Well, first I need to get his nose tipped. I need to get him soft. Okay. And then I'm going to get him to start moving his shoulders over and stepping out with that inside front foot. Okay, well, we're not spinning or we're not side passing or whatever, but hey, we made an effort. We're going to release the pressure here. And I think too many people are putting the end result before all the steps it's going to take to get there.
I agree, and I love that you mentioned the pressure. I think just like anything you do, whether you're practicing the piano, you're going to go play soccer, you're going to be an accountant, so you work in QuickBooks all day long or in Excel spreadsheets, you have to practice. And that whole concept of the release, right? Anybody can kind of stand behind at a kick range and do the flag deal, but not anybody can be the one that's releasing that horse the minute it shows the sign of wanting to do what's right. And boy, don't you agree that that takes timing and practice and many, many hours on the ground and in the saddle with horses?
Oh, absolutely. And I wish I had better timing than what I do. I mean, I wish I could.
Don't we
you
all?
Know, I'm constant,
don't
I'm
we
constantly,
all?
I'm constantly thinking about my timing, you know, and especially if it's something that I've been working on quite a bit. I evaluate myself first before I evaluate the horse. What have I missed? Did I miss something? And then go from there. And I have friends that I call, or I go out to their place, or I talk to them about horses I'm having a specific issue with. Well, you might be missing this. Okay. And that's usually the case. You know, I missed something. I missed a little bit of an effort. And my philosophy is all I can ask of any horse is just try. Just try. So I try to reward every single try that they make and take the pressure off then. Because as long as they're trying, we can get somewhere. So.
Absolutely. And that's why looking at things like their breath and looking at things like we talked about, tack fit and whether or not they're sore in certain areas, these are all things that we need to do our job first before we can expect them to do their job. And I just think that that's so important. And if you'll do me a favor now, Brent, and talk a little bit about Harmony Equine Center, and because you're a very unique facility, and I would love for the listeners to know a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm real proud to work here, so I talk about it all the time. Harmony Equine Center is a division of the Denver Dumb Friends League. The Denver Dumb Friends League has been a dog and cat shelter for over 100 years. And a few years ago, they recognized the need for what Harmony is. And what we are is we are strictly an impound facility for law enforcement. So in the past, it's been, unfortunately, some law enforcement agencies would kind of turn a blind eye to some kind of animal cruelty or whatever because they don't know what to do with the horses. It's a big animal. You're not equipped to handle it. They're not trained to handle the situation or anything like that. So what we did is we opened up the center. We will accept the horse. In many cases, we'll go get the horse, hold it for whichever law enforcement agency's got it through the court process, collect evidence. We've got certified scales. We take pictures. Oh, geez, we take a lot of pictures, you know, as the horses are gaining weight or getting better, give them the proper medical treatment they need. And then eventually, once the court process is over and the horse is signed over to that law enforcement agency, we've got a memorandum of understanding that they sign the horse over to us. And then they enter my training program, and we'll do everything we can to get that horse rehabilitated mentally, because usually they're already rehabilitated physically, and get them back out adopted.
And isn't Harmony Equine Center a 501c3, so people can adopt a horse, they can also do a donation, which will be a tax write-off for them, things like that?
Absolutely, it is. The entire Denver Dumb Friends League is that way, and we're funded strictly off of the generous donations of wonderful people that want to do something to help these animals.
And what I've enjoyed so much about Harmony is that you do monthly programs where you'll bring in people. I know I was asked, and I felt very honored to do so, to go and talk about teaching techniques for riding instructors there. I know that you yourself, Brent, do lots of free talks, and they're absolutely free to the public, just to get the public out to the center, let them meet the horses, and hopefully find homes for the horses, which I think is such a wonderful thing that you want to educate as well as, you know, have horses find good homes. It's a win-win.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, you can, first of all, never learn enough. I really enjoyed your talk, and I do everything I can to help educate the public because, first of all, we don't want these horses coming back to us. You know, they've already been through enough, so we certainly don't want them back coming back. And, you know, horses are getting very, very popular as a hobby or a pastime more than they were in the past as a working animal or a performance tool, show horses and things like that. They're becoming a lot more, urbanized, I guess, or, you know, they're becoming pets and members of the family. And a lot of people, they move out to the country, and country living's getting popular as well. And they've got 3 acres and they want a horse, and they just, it's not like buying a dog, you know, you can't keep it in the house with you. And they're a big animal, and it's a lot of expense. So we really do everything we can to help educate the public. You know, I did a talk on how to pick out your first horse. We did another talk about horse ownership 101. Here's the costs and the expenses that you can be expecting moving forward with your horse project, here's different things you can do. Here's different breeds of horses. And a lot of the people that came didn't even know that there was that many breeds of horses. They just kind of thought a horse was a horse was a horse. So,
yep.
So I think it's been very helpful to the public, and I look forward to doing a lot more of these educational opportunities for
that
them.
That saves a lot of them coming back again and making
That's
their way
right.
back.
Sure does.
Because, you know, you're right. I don't think a lot of people do know. And how would you know? I mean, you're getting into – you play tennis, you know there's a tennis racket and some balls, and you get there's a tennis court. You got three variables. But, you know, with horses, it's so, so much more. But yet people still think it's like playing tennis, you know, that they get the horse, they get some food, and they're done. And
right.
Unfortunately, that's where they get in trouble.
Right. Yeah. You know, I've explained to people several times about what floating their teeth is. Well, they had no idea they had to go. Well, I go. I say, you go to the dentist, don't you? You know, your horse is going to need it probably once a year, you know. Well, how often do they need shoes or trim? Every 8 weeks if you want your horse to be sound and healthy. And people that want a horse and they're in love with the idea of getting a horse are kind of shocked about, oh, wow, they're actually a lot of work.
Yes.
Yes, they are. So we want that to be right up front before it happens. And I think the more that we can educate the public on how to do it and do it right, it's going to eventually, hopefully soon, but unfortunately I don't think so, eliminate the need for a place like Harmony.
But I like the fact that you guys are working with the horses before they go out too, because so many of the programs around the country, you know, with the repos, end up going back out in the same condition they are, you know, a little better health-wise, but nothing is done mentally. So,
right.
You know, you've got those situations to deal with. Yeah, the horse is a little bit fatter and a little bit happier physically, but mentally you've got the same issues.
Right, absolutely. And I've worked around organizations that don't work with the horses. They just want them to go out and get good homes and things. And unfortunately, a lot of the people that these horses are going to are not horsemen. They're your average recreational person that wants to have a horse, and they're not equipped with the skill set to be able to handle a horse that's mentally damaged or whatever. And I feel a very strong obligation to not only the public but the horse as well to set them up for success whenever they leave here.
Absolutely.
So,
Brent, we're running out of time. What's the website?
Oh, the website would be ddfl.org, and just click on equine. And you can view all the horses we have available for adoption and give us a call and come on out, and we'll be happy to work with you and get you fixed up on whatever kind of horse you're looking for. We got a lot.
All right, very good. And that's in Western Colorado, right?
Yes, sir. Front Range.
Right outside
Colorado.
Of Denver.
Thank you, Brent. Appreciate you being here.
All right,
here.
Guys. Thank you very much for having me on. Okay. I enjoyed myself.
Bye, Brent.
Bye.
Well, two fascinating guests today. I think it's one of your best shows. I really enjoyed just listening to it. You guys were on a roll, and Brent, so articulate. And what a great thing that they're doing out there that so many of these programs don't do is that they miss the part that he's doing.
The full-time trainer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. And that's not cheap. I understand that. But, boy, it saves a lot of them from coming back again. Which is
it sure does. It's been one of the best projects I've ever worked on as a volunteer. You know, I've really enjoyed being a part of that program. It's a special one. They do really good work.
And it's Harmony Equine Center out in Colorado. Well, you did a great job putting this show together again today, Christy. And of course, we do the Certified Horsemanship Association show, the special training episode. Third Tuesday of every month. See, I'm going to get that right from now on. I'm never going to make that mistake again. Like
that's perfect. You're perfect.
I know. I'm getting so good at this. And, of course, you can join us again on Horses in the Morning. We are here every Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time at horsesinthemorning.com. The recorded version can be found on our app. You just go to the iOS or Android app store and search for Horse Radio Network. The Horses in the Morning show is one of 10 shows that's on the app. So you can take a listen to all of them as well. And, of course, the CHA can be found at
www.chainstructorswithans.com.
And if you have some things that you want to hear about on the training episode, some things that the CHA deals with or talks about or any training issue in particular, drop me an email at glenn@horseradionetwork.com or jennifer@horseradionetwork.com, and we'll definitely get it over to Christy and get it done.
Sounds good. We have a lot of instructors that want to chat and a lot of accredited facilities that love to share what they have to do, so we will find someone that can answer those questions, and we will make it happen.
Thank you, Christy.
Have a good one.